Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owen Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Make sure to get to the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe to the newsletter, subscribe on YouTube, follow the social media accounts, and generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. You can also get your Common Fan socks on the website. You can also go to sillysco.com to get those socks, S-I-L-L-I-E-S-C-O.com. Use the promo code GBR for life. That's GBR, number four, L-I-F-E. And you can get 25% off, not just your Common Fan socks, but any other sock on the site. They've got all kinds of fun, colorful socks. Go to sillysco.com to check out more. This is episode 3 of T.O., a series focused on the coaching career of the legendary Tom Osborne. In episode 1, we examine Coach Osborne's time as a player in the NFL, his early days straddling graduate school and football coaching, and ultimately his elevation on Bob Devaney's staff. In episode 2, we looked at T.O.'s early years as a head coach with insights from Husker legend Tom Rudd and longtime Nebraska sports writer Mike Babcock. Make sure to check out the first 2 episodes if you haven't already. For today's episode, Chasing the Crown, we'll focus on Osborne's excellent teams of the 1980s, a decade during which Nebraska won numerous conference championships and came agonizingly close to multiple national championships. We are excited today to be joined by some fantastic guests. Steve Taylor is a conference championship winning, All-American, All-Conference, All-Everything quarterback who started at Nebraska from 1986 through 1988. He is still top 10 all-time among Husker quarterbacks in rushing yards and rushing touchdowns, and top 15 all-time in passing yards and passing touchdowns. Ken Hamilton covered Nebraska football, among many other topics, for the Lincoln Journal-Star over the course of a prolific 45-year career at the paper. Steve and Ken, it is a true honor and pleasure to have you joining the Common Fans today.
This is I appreciate you guys. We go way back.
Yeah, and Steve and I should be on a golf course right now. So
thanks for giving us a moment of your time.
Yes, we appreciate you hanging with the Common Fans instead. And all of our listeners will appreciate that as well.
So is there really a Common Fan in the Nebraska world?
Well, but yeah, right. We bill it as a Nebraska football podcast by the Common Fan for the Common Fan. But an ongoing theme on this podcast is that Husker fans are very much uncommon.
Uncommon. Yeah. I thought it was just me, so I wanted to
in all the best ways, I dare say.
Yeah.
So here's where we left off, guys. In our last episode, we looked at T.O.'s early years as a head coach, where he was still kind of finding his footing. He had some really strong teams, never won fewer than 9 games in a season, finally beat Oklahoma in 1978. And brought home a conference title. There was really not much drop off from the Devaney era, if you look at the era as a whole. But this is also when the narrative started to creep in that he couldn't win the big one. Multiple losses to Oklahoma, some tough bowl game defeats, and at one point, Osborne even interviewed for the Colorado job, which will give Husker fans nightmares to even think about. Now, while Husker fans today would be thrilled with T.O.'s record from the 70s, I think it's safe to say Osborne was still establishing himself and arguably still coaching in Bob Devaney's shadow. As we pivot to look at the 80s, it's clear he took things to another level. With a 103-20 record, Nebraska was the winningest program of the decade. They won 5 conference championships and came tantalizingly close to claiming two national titles. We're going to get into all of that. But Steve, I want to start with you. One theme that's come up again and again as we've kind of delved in to the Osborne years is how he expanded Nebraska's recruiting reach from coast to coast. And that effort actually started back when he was still an assistant in the late 60s. But Steve, you grew up in Fresno. You graduated from high school in San Diego. What was your experience like being recruited by Coach Osborne? And I'd also be curious kind of your take on what the perception of Nebraska football was like from where you were, you know, from where you were in California in the mid 80s.
Yeah, you know, my story is pretty, I think it's pretty cool. I look at it as if I won the lottery. I was played all my football in Fresno, California, played with some legends like Icky Woods and some legends in Fresno. And then the coach left and went to Lincoln High in San Diego. And I was going to be the quarterback coming up in those ranks. And it's weird. When I was in Fresno, I never lost a football game. We had a very, very strong class, right? But anyway, with Ray Hooper taking a new job in San Diego, he asked me to come live with him. And he said that that will broaden my reach with my skill level. I can probably, you know, pick and choose what school I would like to attend if I was in a larger market. So I talked with my mom and we made the decision to move down to San Diego and I live with him. I remember watching the 83-84 Orange Bowl. I'll never forget this. And of course, you know, Osborne went for two. What they were doing as far as the offense was, I thought it was pretty. It was great. It was sophisticated. It was not the wishbone. It was a power of football. So I thought that, you know, now at the time, I had seen the 83-84 Orange Bowl, and they actually threw the ball a little bit, right? So I thought they threw the ball a little bit more than what we actually did. But anyway, my coach asked me, he said, hey, what school would you like to go to? And I said, I want to go to the University of Nebraska. I'm like, yeah. He said, fine. So he said, we're going to put together 3 or 4 or 5 tapes of your best games and send them off to Nebraska and see what they say. And that was, you know, right after my junior year. So I got a letter back within like 2 weeks from at the time, which was Steve Peterson, who was a recruiting coordinator. And he said that they were only going to take one quarterback in this class. And I was their first choice, you know. So I felt like I won the lottery. I never forget this. I was driving to a football camp up to California, Cal Berkeley. And I was ecstatic when I got that letter. So my process was as easy as it can get. Because I knew where I wanted to go. They were my first choice, and Nebraska wanted me. So all the other schools were just behind that. So I verbally commit. I had a deal with Osborne, actually. I verbally commit to Nebraska, but I told him that I was going to take all my other visits, you know. So I went to Minnesota, Colorado, you know, and all these other schools, Cal Berkeley, and tried to go to a few more, but they wouldn't let you do that. I went to USC, UCLA. They were close, so they were unofficial visits. Well, anyway, my process was fairly easy. You know, I knew where I was going. I knew the stability was there, the coaching staff. They were by far the best institution at that time. It was exciting time. And so it was easy for me. The fan base was stupid crazy, loved football. The facilities were off the charts. The only thing was just the weather. It was the weather and the city in itself, you know, as far as lack of diversity and lack of things to do. But at that time, Nebraska was so good that you would endure that. That was okay because you're going. And at that time, you had CBS, ABC, and ESPN was kind of coming in the ranks. But if you wanted to be seen on TV, being from California, you had to have national exposure. And Nebraska had that. So it was an easy decision for me. And it just took off from there. You know, today is a different age. And I talk to people a lot. I talked to a lot of people about this. Nebraska itself is a different institution than it was in the 80s and the early 90s. And that's why I think Nebraska has struggled over the years. But we can get into that later. So, you know, and Coach Osborne approached me and he said, Steve, I'm going to promise you two things. You're going to play quarterback and you're going to get a good education. And all these other schools were promising me all these other things monetarily. Lou Holtz at Minnesota at the time and some other coaches, Kyle Berkeley. You know, Joe Cap, but you know, they said that they would, you know, take care of me and my family, you know, but Nebraska said straight up, we're just going to give a chance to play football and give a chance to get a good, solid education. And I trusted them and I believed them. And that's what happened.
So, well, Geoff and Lincoln here is our resident. He's kind of a half Husker, half Notre Dame fan.
Are you suggesting
that there was some untoward behavior coming from Lou Holtz? Could it be?
I tell you, Lou Holtz. This is a true story. I'm not embellishing at all. And it's interesting, right? So Lou Holtz was doing these magic trips, and when I took my visit there, Dave Winfield picked me up from the airport, and he had his Mercedes and he had his girl. Right, this is a true story. I never forget this. He picked me up at the airport. Of course, Lou was there, greeted me, and he said, "Dave's going to take you somewhere." And so I got in the car with Dave, and we said, "Dude, they must really want you, right?" So I never forget this. We go downtown Minneapolis, and I don't know, 30, 40 foot building. We get into the elevator, and well, I got myself. Dave said, "You're just supposed to go up to this floor." And there's a guy by the name of Tim McKay. He wants to talk with you. And I said, cool. So went up there, big double doors, all glass, corner windows and everything. And I saw this stand with all these books in the corner. It was Tim McKay. That year, he had just bought the Twins. And he ended up owning some huge envelope company. And he literally looked at me and said, "Hey, you know, I was told that they really want you and you'll be set here. We can take care of you and take care of your mom." That was a true story. And, obviously it was night and day the Minnesota facilities were off the charts. I mean, they were off the charts. I mean, they had great rec room and their facilities were top notch. And Lou Holtz was going to be the coach. He ended up going somewhere else that year, you know, so that goes another reason why I like Coach Osmond, because, you know, he was true to his word. But anyway, that was one experience. And when I went to Nebraska on my recruiting trip, I never forget this. When I went to these other schools, I would go shopping and get all the hats, all the jerseys, and all all the sweat tops and everything. I never forget this. So when I came to a little Big Red store, which was right across from the stadium at Nebraska, Coach Darlington recruited me, and he was there. So I walked around, and I picked out probably maybe $200 to $500 worth of apparel, and went up there to the cash register, thinking Coach Darlington would come in and just take care of everything, and he just stood there, like looking at me and saying, "Oh, that's a pretty nice thing," and he didn't pay for it. Yeah. I mean, so I had about probably $50 to my name. So I literally had to take everything back. I took everything back, and all I bought was a corduroy Nebraska hat, and one of my favorite hats, and that's what I use when I sign my letter of intent. Was the difference. That's a true story. That was a difference at that time with Nebraska versus other institutions that I was being recruited by.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Steve,
why didn't you ever share that before?
Statute of limitations.
It's kind of embarrassing. It's kind of embarrassing, right? Because all these other kids are saying the things that they got when they went on. I really got a lot of stuff from other schools, you know? And University of California was taking care of my high school coach. That was one school that I had to go to and visit. He said, "Steve, you got to go to Cal." I was like, "I don't want to go to Cal." I'm like, "Really?" He said, "No, you got to go to their camp and you got to go on an official visit. You have to do that." So yeah, there were some things going on under the table, which of course I couldn't benefit from because I went to Nebraska.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you answered one of my questions. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I was just going to say, I remember, you know, covering recruiting back in those days, highly competitive, and we had to beat the World Herald and they had to beat us. And I get a phone call. It might've been somebody at the bookstore or the fan store, and says, "There's a kid here being recruited. He's from Lincoln High." And I said, "Well, I know all the players in town. I knew most of the players in the state. You sure?" "Yeah, I think there's a quarterback from Lincoln High." So I call over to the coach at Lincoln High at the time. I forget who it was. I said, "You got a quarterback coming to Nebraska?" He says, "No." And so it took me like 3 days to find out, oh, it's a different Lincoln High. And it's in California. and that the coaches were pretty, very excited to get you.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's a pretty different time. It'd be a little easier to sleuth and figure out who that was.
Internet
in this day and age.
Yeah.
You were on the phone a lot. Where did they put you up? Because I remember I got
Cornhusker Hotel.
And that's where I got to know some of the front desk people. So I knew which recruiters, which recruits were coming to town. And it really upset the World Herald guys because I knew who was in town. And then I could chase those people down eventually. It was very competitive, but it was cool to get you.
Yeah.
And then I think we put in the paper finally when you signed, like, there's a guy from Lincoln High going to be quarterback. And and people were, no, it's a little further west.
The only hiccup I had a verbal agreement with Coach Osborne because I said, hey, Coach, I'm going to take these other four visits, right? I said, but I'm coming to Nebraska. And he was like, I said, but here's the deal. I will commit and you can't have any other quarterbacks come on an official visit. That was our deal that we kind of made. This is the only thing that Coach Osborne was a little sketchy on. And I thought we had that agreement. Anyway, I found out that they brought in Eric Mitchell, who was a Parade All-American quarterback
at
that time. They brought him up on a visit. And I was upset about that. So I counseled and I said, I'm going to the University of Washington.
Oh, you did?
Okay. I did. It came out that I was going to go to University of Washington because they recruited me. And I love Don James. And I had a friend of mine from Fresno that went there as a defensive back named Bessie Johnson Jackson. Anyway, so that came out a little glitch. Then Coach Osborne called me and said, no, Steve, you know, a lot of players verbally commit and they end up changing their mind. So, you know, we had to take some precautions. I said, well, Coach, once I give you my word, I'm going to do that. I understand. So we did have a little hiccup there. And it worked out really well. But that's when I knew I made a really good decision because when I had my first start as a sophomore against Florida State, I got a personal letter from Don James. I never forget that. He wrote a personal letter saying, you know, I'm so happy for you. We knew you were going to be a great quarterback and that's why we wanted you and blah, 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 right? But for someone to do that after you sign, you know, that just goes to tell you about the character of the coaches that I was looking at. He was probably by far the closest to Coach Osborne. And the only thing I didn't like about the University of Washington was that they had these gray face masks and they painted the top portion gold. They painted it gold. And I'm like, why would you do that? I mean, how'd you do that, right? That was my only pet peeve about the University of Washington. But I had a great visit there and it was a great school. But Nebraska was top notch at that time. You couldn't really compete with them.
Yeah. Do you remember how screwy your first opener as a starter was?
Yeah.
Everybody got put on probation. I think 66 Nebraskans.
Yeah.
Florida State players.
We'll get there, Ken. We'll get there, Ken. That's okay.
I got a story about that too. That'd be funny. Yeah.
It's okay. I love it.
Hey, Steve, the question I had, and you already alluded to it a little bit about visiting Lincoln. You coming from, you know, sunny California. Did you have any pressure to stay closer to home?
No. My coach had played at Jefferson City, Lincoln, Missouri, and his wife was from Wisconsin. She was from Wisconsin. And she used to talk about Midwest football all the time, right? I had seen USC, UCLA, I've seen all, you know, and I wanted to leave California. I was open to just a different life. And so I was excited about that. You know, I think twice about it, not playing in the snowy, you know, tundra and all that, all the stuff here about the cold weather games and, you know, me never being, you know, feeling, you know, seeing snow and playing in those conditions. I don't even think I ever played in a game in rain in California, to be honest with you. I don't think maybe a sprinkle or something. Anyway, so I wanted to leave and she talked so much about the Big Ten. And, you know, when Nebraska came around, Midwest, I've never experienced anything like that in my entire life. I never forget this. And I was this is the first time I've ever flown on an airplane coming from San Diego. And for something, you know, they put me in like a t-shirt, then an Oxford button down. Then I had a sweater and then I had a tweed jacket on. I was Mr. Collegiate, right? Going on this recruiting trip. And I never forget this, getting off the plane and walking onto the plane to go to Nebraska. I felt the cold air in between the tunnel. And it felt like, I mean, it felt like you're in a freezer, right? I've never, ever experienced anything like that in my entire life. You know, so then once, and then I came in December, I think it was December 18th or something like that, when Nebraska was preparing for the bowl game to play LSU. So it was definitely an experience, but I was excited about it. And, you know, it's something I've never experienced. And it took me a season to really adjust to it.
I believe it.
Because Osborne had these ridiculous rules that if you're carrying a football, he wanted your skin to touch the football, so we couldn't wear sleeves. Anyone touching football couldn't wear sleeves, you know. So, gotcha. But it took me a while to get acclimated to the temperatures.
I believe it. I'm sure. Yeah.
Ken, I've got a question for you. Sure. We're talking about the 80s here, so I'm just wondering, what was the perception of Coach Osborne in the media and the public heading into 1980? What was the perception of Coach both locally and nationally?
Well, he in 78 had gone out and visited Colorado because he was upset about the lack of support, and Colorado was offering jobs. And to this day, he claims he really wasn't serious about it. And yet you talk to some of his assistants of the time, and they thought he was. Because, you know, up until 78, he hadn't beaten Oklahoma. And 78, before the Oklahoma game, he had been out to visit Colorado. So there were some mixed feelings about him. And you think, yeah, boy, he had those terrible 9-3 seasons with a bowl game. And, you know, being a growing up a Bears fan, I was used to, like, yeah, winning season maybe every 20 years. And he's, you know, he's knocking them down, and they had all these strings of wins against everybody in the Big Eight and played a really good non-conference schedule. And the perception was, well, you know, he had almost done it in 83. But the 84 Orange Bowl, but the 83 season. And when he went for two, there were a few people who said, oh, should have gone for one, got the tie, got the national title. And yet Bob Devaney, everybody who knew Tom, all the players were like, when Nebraska got the ball at the far end for that last drive, it was like, I wonder what kind of play they're going to run for the 2-point conversion. And they still had 92 yards to go. And sure enough, they score and they run the play. And it, you know, ball's a little bit behind Jeff Smith, and it doesn't happen. But I think by then everybody was convinced, okay, this is the right guy. This is the guy we got to have. Because nobody was ever going to be better than Bob Vanney. In a lot of people's minds. And then they learned later on, oh yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So jumping into the 80s, in 1980, the Huskers go 9-2 in the regular season. They lose to Oklahoma. I also want to point out, in that 80 season, there was a regular season loss, 18-14, to Florida State. That's going to be relevant to this discussion because certain Florida schools, FSU being one of them, will start to become a thorn in Nebraska's side here in the 80s. 81, the Huskers go 9-2. They beat Oklahoma. They win the Big Eight. That starts a string of four consecutive Big Eight titles. 82, the Huskers go 11-1. They beat Oklahoma again. They beat LSU in the Orange Bowl. Their one loss was at number 8 Penn State in the third game of the season. They lose 27-24. Fairly good size controversy. The Huskers score a late touchdown to take a 24-20 lead. And then with 9 seconds left, Penn State quarterback Todd Blackledge throws a pass to tight end Mike McCluskey. McCluskey is clearly out of bounds. He's even later admitted he was out of bounds in later years. And then even when the Nittany Lions go on to score, there was some question about whether Kirk Bowman secured the ball in the end zone. But for that call, Nebraska likely goes undefeated and wins the national championship. And then you've both already mentioned 83. Turner Gill at quarterback, Mike Rozier at running back, would lead the nation in rushing, win the Heisman Trophy. Irving Fryer, Dean Steinkuhler won the Outland Trophy. The team went wire to wire, number one coming into the season, number one across the board. The Orange Bowl sees number one Nebraska play number 5 Miami. Miami kind of shockingly runs out to a 17-0 lead. The Huskers claw their way back. under 2 minutes left, trailing 31-24, as you just alluded to, Ken. They drive the length of the field. Mike Rozier's out with an injury, but Jeff Smith scores a touchdown with 48 seconds left. Osborne holds up two fingers in that sort of iconic image now of T.O. deciding to go for two. I feel like that 83 team, that season, you know, the Huskers, for common fans who don't know, the way the other bowl games had shaken out, as Ken said, the Huskers could have just kicked the extra point and tied. There's no overtime in those days. There's no playoff in those days. The way it would have worked out is they would have likely been voted national champions.
Yeah.
And Osborne says, I want my teams to know they, you know, we always play for the win. Ken, I want to stop here and ask you, and then Steve, I want to get your take on this too. But Ken, I want to ask sort of both those 82 seasons and the 83 seasons, national championship caliber teams. What's your reaction or recollection of how Coach Osborne reacted to those losses and those massive disappointments? Those are gut punches. The Penn State one was totally unfair. How did he handle those moments?
Well, he didn't wear them on his sleeve. You know, the 82 season, Charlie McBride will tell you, they had one of the best defenses ever. And they didn't have a great offense. And the fact they couldn't generate a lot of points was not surprising. 83, they had the offense of all time. And until Steve came along, and that was the greatest one ever.
They're pretty stout.
Yeah, but they, you know, that defense in 83 was not one of their best. I mean, this is back in the time when Osborne is still taking leftover guys. Like, he's not a very good offensive tackle. We'll send him to the defense. And defense didn't get to recruit defensive-only players very often. And it's rarely discussed, but you had a lot of leftover guys that were playing defense. And it wasn't until after the 83 season, then they start chasing down top-notch defensive backs, linebackers. You know, Steve had to practice against those guys all the time. And by the time he got there, Nebraska was actually recruiting defensive guys. But up until that point, defense was pretty much the offensive leftovers. And Tom learned from that and moved on and got better at more balance and such. But he would rather, you know, recruit seven receivers and seven quarterbacks than even one linebacker.
Huh. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's not it in brass tacks, but that's kind of the way stuff went.
And another thing I say to piggyback on that, it's interesting because you have to be on the team to know how really, and I have several conversations with people in regards to the walk-on program and this and that and everything. So, and one of the main reasons why I came to Nebraska was off, obviously because of the offensive line and the guys that produced and what I saw on TV. But, you know, we were very close. Like our national championship game was against Oklahoma pretty much every year. Right. And then you have Miami. So we were very close, to maybe doing that too. But the difference maker was what I'm going to piggyback off of what Ken said was that not only did Nebraska start recruiting specifically defensive players, they started recruiting players that had more of an edge to them. You know, and so I think, and this is what I had this conversation with Vashawn Jackson and all these guys, you know, they talk about, well, how many national championships did you win, Steve? I said, you know what, dude, honestly, I got five. And he looked at me like, you're crazy. He goes, what do you mean? I said, how many do you have? He said, I have 93, 94, 95, 97. Well, I said, well, I got 71, 72, 94, 95, and 97. I said, right. I got you beat, right? And he looked at me like, whoa. I was like, yeah, dude. I said, the reason, and I'm not, this is a true story, the reason why you guys won those teams, excluding what 83 and 84 did, it was because of the approach that we had when I was starting there. At that time, you were not allowed, I wouldn't say allowed, but Coach Osborne did not like you to talk about winning the national championship. He wouldn't want you talking about your personal goals. It was really laid back, and it wasn't a goal. And so, but we have personalities like Broder Thomas from Houston, right? That was outspoken. Yeah, that was outspoken, a great player. And we changed the narrative of what you can say and how you felt about yourself. Not that you're being arrogant or cocky. You just feel good about your skill level and what you can do. So we were a lot more vocal. Now, I wasn't in the locker room in '83 with those teams, but I know for a fact we were a lot more vocal in regards to saying, hey, this is Nebraska. We can get this done. We have the players to do it. And then we backed it up. We backed it up probably most of the time, right? You know, so that, and then Coach Osborne developed himself because he would constantly say, well, I'm not a figurehead coach like Barry Switzer, right? That was his thing. Coach Osborne, he taught, he coached everything. He grew you off the field. He was not just a personality that's going to motivate you. That was the, you know, the good and the bad kind of with Nebraska, Oklahoma. And so when we had guys that came out like Leroy Etan, Neil Smith, Lawrence Pete, myself, who was a quarterback, that were a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say a little bit more outspoken. We're all confident, but we're a little bit more outspoken what we can do. And then we backed it up. And Coach Osborne allowed that to happen. Like, he didn't control it. He allowed that to happen. He let guys be themselves. And I think he grew. Because when I saw his halftime speeches doing those other teams, we never had halftime speeches like that. We never had a prayer or sayings before kickoff. We didn't do any of that stuff. It was really just subtle. You go out and you handle your business. So I think with that, Nebraska went out, and that's why they won those championships the way they did, and had the players that they recruited. And Osborne embraced it. It was great to see him grow, because I always knew that he was going to win his national championships. I always knew that. I mean, we were too prepared. We were too good. And we faced some damn good football teams. I'm talking about some, when I played, we had probably the toughest preseason schedule you could probably have if you look at Nebraska history of the teams that we played and where they were ranked at the time. There's no question. I even talk about this at Tommy Frazier, you know, and I'm talking week after week, right? Now, where is on a team? But anyway, so I always knew Coach Osborne was going to win. He was going to get his national championship. It was just going to be a matter of time. Now, did I think he'd get him like he got him? No, but, you know, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. And it was just a great thing to witness and to be part of that.
That's great, man. That's awesome. Ken, you already kind of alluded to it. I want to go back to that 84 Orange Bowl and the decision to go for two. Ken, you mentioned it. Like, the perception there was, you know, T.O.'s the guy. He's trying to make big moves, obviously. Yeah. At that time, nobody could be better than Devaney, right? But, Steve, the one thing I wanted to pick your brain about here is somebody from the outside just watching these games back then. Seeing Tom Osborne have the brass set to do something like that, was there a message sent or an impact on future teams, in your opinion?
As far as
him making a decision like that, an aggressive decision, yes. Is that something that you saw and you're like, yes, I want to play for this dude?
And not only that, if you had, like, before Nebraska, you come here, you play on a freshman team, as a sophomore, you redshirt, and then you get bigger and stronger, and then you know the system, and then you play. But Nebraska, I was going to start saying, you know, we got all this talent, right? We want these guys to play now. Like, let them play now, right? And before, that was never the case. So he, once again, he started to grow, and he was like, you know, it's okay if a kid is a freshman and he's talented. Let's get him in there and let him play, right? Like, I didn't redshirt. Broder Thomas didn't redshirt. Leroy Etienne didn't redshirt. I mean, just imagine. Neil Smith didn't redshirt, right? I mean, my sophomore year, I was about as green as you can get as a quarterback. I mopped up games throughout the year. I came off the bench against Oklahoma, and then I came late in the third quarter against Michigan. And I see Coach Osborne at Madonna, and he goes, Steve, I should have put you in there sooner. He said, I should have. But he was really reluctant to do that because you were so young. Right. That wasn't the Nebraska way. But he adapted and he started to let those players play. And then so what do you have? You have 3 or 4 year starters. Right. So when I started as a sophomore, when Tommy Frazier came in, he was like, hey, take the reins. Let him go. Because what I did as a sophomore, right? and he let those guys play. He let them play. And when you got 3 or 4 year starters and they're talented, you're going to win some football games. So he just changed his whole philosophy, just tweaked it. And it was just great to witness. It really was just to watch him go through that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I want to jump into the, I want to dive deeper into the Steve Taylor era at Nebraska. So Matt, Jeff, and I are all 1982 babies, Steve. So we're like, your era is barely on the edge of our recollections and memories.
Our common fandom.
Our common fandom, exactly. But gosh, looking into, doing some research for this episode, I mean, so many great teams.
Research.
So first of all, the 84 team goes 9-2. They tie for the Big 8 championships, win the Sugar Bowl. The 85 team goes 9-2. They lose to Florida State in the season opener. Those damn Seminoles enter the story again. Yes. And they lose to Michigan in the Fiesta Bowl. So then, Steve, your 3 years as a starter, 86 to 88, the Huskers go 31-6. You win the Big 8 in 1988. You beat LSU in the Sugar Bowl after the 86 season. There were losses to Florida State in the Fiesta Bowl, Free Shoes University in the Fiesta Bowl after the 87 season.
There's two games that bugged me throughout my career, and that's one of them. But go, yeah.
Okay, I want to hear about that. And Miami in the Orange Bowl after the 88 seasons. I want to get to that Fiesta Bowl in a little bit here, Steve. First of all, I'm curious, which one of those three teams that you quarterbacked was the best from your perspective?
Oh God, It's interesting.
Is that like asking which kid's your favorite?
Yeah. I would. It's tough. I would probably say maybe the 87 team, because I think our defense was better than 88, right?
Yeah.
I would say that. That team we could have won the national championship. We were a few players shy. One running back. My offensive line was never, and I love these guys, they were never as stout as the ones that we've had in the past. Like, it's amazing when people see me, they say, "Well, who's your running back?" or "Who was your receiver?" They ask me who I played with, right? Because they get me mixed up with Turner and everything. And my wife one day said, "You know, Steve, you never had an offensive lineman drafted the 3 years you started." And I was like, "Well, I guess you're kind of right, right?" But they were good, but they weren't like the Steinkuhlers and the Remingtons and all those guys that you mentioned, you know. And then a key loss that we had, that we lost Doug DeBose. We lost Doug DeBose my sophomore year. And that was huge, because we would have had the 1-2 punch that Nebraska's always had. We would have had Doug DeBose, who was a punching back, shifty, elusive, didn't have great speed, but he could still break the long one. And then we had easy Enzone Jones, who was quick, fast, elusive. Imagine having that tandem for me for 2 years and the pressure that takes off me. So, you know, we lost him, which would have been a huge difference. Then defensively, Nebraska has started developing. We didn't quite have the defensive backs that they had in the later teams. You know, we have some really good ones. And then our defensive linemen were better with Neil Smith and Broderick Thomas, the linebacker position. You know, Broderick went to Coach Osborne and said, "Hey," made him make some decisions. Say, "Hey, I would like you, this guy, to coach me, classify me as a, you got me on all, I'm really an outside linebacker. I'm not a defensive end." Anyway, so Nebraska started tweaking their defense with players, skill levels, putting more athletic people at the monster backs, things of that nature. So, but I would probably say our 87 team, we were pretty stout and we're pretty healthy. Although we were very, very good in 88 as well.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get 3 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
But I think that was a team that we probably should have got it done if we didn't have that bye. And obviously, we know Oklahoma teams are, you know, fantastic, right? They were fantastic.
Yeah.
And I look back and I looked one year, they had like 11 or 12 guys drafted like in the first two rounds, you know, with the Bosworths and the Ricky Dixons and the Canelius. I mean, all these guys, they're pretty outstanding. So I would say we were very, very close. And I think Osborne learned so much from my time when I was there, starting from 86, 87, 88, with the type of players that he needed to recruit physically and also maturity-wise, confidence level-wise, and then just piecing things together. So it was coming together for sure.
And the coaching staff in following him,
yes,
also got better. I mean, the you know, the, well, who was your quarterback coach?
We didn't have one.
Yeah.
Coach Osborne was our, he was, Osborne did everything. He did everything. He was the quarterback coach.
Quarterback coach.
No, he did everything.
You had Tenneper working stuff out with Dan Young on the offensive line. And Charlie was kind of tinkering with the defense here and there. And of course, nobody did anything without Tom's, you know, diving in approval. But the recruiting got better because Nebraska was better. They started doing, you know, both Coast Moore. You were kind of a door opener since, you know, when Devaney recruited those California JUCO kids in 1969. And that's when they built the national championship teams for 70, 71. And it was California JUCO guys. And that kind of went away. And then you came. And oh, they had the door open to California and the West Coast again. And
yeah.
And that's why they maintained that level of,
and then plus the exposure, right? I mean, we were on ABC and CBS, I mean, probably two or three or four preseason games, you know. Like before then, the only games I really saw in Nebraska, which I, you know, was the 83-84 Orange Bowl. But when we started having that huge national exposure and being ranked as high as we were, I mean, it just opened up all the other states for Nebraska recruiting. You got guys coming from Texas, from Florida. Back then, Nebraska really concentrated on the East Coast and stuff like that, you know, in New York, you know, Camden, all those kind of places. But, you know, he would go into the heart of Oklahoma and he would go into Texas and he would recruit these players. And we had the stout and we had the stuff to back it up, that those kids would come and play for Nebraska. You know, the Will Shields and all those type of guys. So it just opened up the areas where Nebraska can go and recruit. And we were so good that players wanted to come here and play. And, of course, our facilities was off the charts, and when you had a guy like Coach Osborne. So it was very, very effective.
Yeah. And your press coverage was probably best ever locally.
Yes. In the for sure, it was. I know it was for a fact.
Yeah, I heard that.
Thanks, Ken. Well, just kind of piggybacking off of that, and I guess this is more not just a Nebraska thing, but just general in the way the college football world has changed so much. You know, one thing that we talk about all these games that we go through all these years, the thing that strikes me is the non-conference opponents. You know, 86, Nebraska plays Florida State and at Illinois and play Oregon and they play at South Carolina. 87, we play number three UCLA, go to number 12 Arizona State, you know, play number 10 A&M in 88, at number five UCLA, plays you don't see that anymore.
No.
You know, I mean, and so many of these schools really want to make sure they get enough wins to get a bowl game. I think that's part of it. You know, another part of it, Steve, you mentioned it. You know, Nebraska at the time was one of the only, a handful of schools who were playing on national TV five or six times a season.
Yeah, right? That's stupid. Right?
You know, it's, and that wasn't, you know, there was probably Nebraska, Oklahoma, maybe the USC, UCLA's, Notre Dame, some of those are playing on national TV as frequently, but now everybody plays on national TV.
Yeah.
You know, that type of scheduling just doesn't happen anymore today. Do you think something's just kind of lost in the fact that we don't get those types of matchups as frequently anymore in the non-conference scheduling?
Well, first of all, I think that has been part of Nebraska's demise, to be frank with you. It just raises your level of play and your focus, you know. And you're talking like opening up with those games. Can you imagine that opening up with a top five team?
No.
Your first game, like my first start was against Florida State at night, right? I mean, so you're opening up with these teams. You're not like softening, you know, the first two or three games and you got a big one, like the third or fourth game, right? I'm talking week in and week out, right? But as a competitor, as a player, if you want to be the best, you got to play the best and you got to beat them. You know, Coach Osborne came to us going into my senior year and said, hey, we got a legitimate chance to win the national championship. We've been approached to play in a kickoff classic, and it'd be Texas A&M. We had to vote, and we voted. No, we're playing Texas A&M. I mean, my senior year, we're in a kickoff classic. We're playing them, right? They have the Blitz Brothers or whomever. And we line up and we play. So I would not trade. I mean, obviously, I would love to have a national championship, right? There's no question. Hindsight's always 20/20. But that's one thing I'm most proud of, that we played the best and we beat the best. We came up short a couple of times, but the games we came up short with, they were damn good football teams.
Right.
Right? They were damn good football teams. So there's nothing to be shameful about that, right? So, and I think that made Nebraska stronger and made them better. All these heartbreaking losses, in the end, it builds character, adversity. I mean, you can go the other way, but for us, it made Nebraska better. And, you know, I know times are different now and everything, but in the end, if you want to be the best, you got to play the best because you will get exposed. It's like Indiana,
Right. Yeah. You
will get exposed. There's no question about it. There's only one game I played throughout my entire career that I said, if we played this team, we will lose probably 9 or 10 times. And that was Miami in 1988 in the Orange Bowl. I never faced a team like that was that good, like interior linemen. They were that, I mean, before I got the snap, they were disrupting the play. They're disrupting the play, like around my feet. I didn't realize this until it was maybe at halftime or after game. My jersey was about as green as you can get. And I never forget this because I was ranked in the top five as quarterbacks. I was thinking, just don't do anything really bad, Steve, to hurt your stock. Right? I mean, real seriously, I was thinking, just don't do anything. And you want to try to win a game, but they were, and I would watch Steve Wash, 3-step, 5-step, progression reads, dump it to, throw a swing around to his back, and he would run 15 to 20 yards. I saw everything in slow motion. It was a different type of game. By then, I was a senior, and I'd seen it all. Florida State was something like that, but Miami was different. I mean, and they just, their interior linemen, their linebackers, they were quick, they were fast, they were all that. And that's when I said, that's what they're talking about when they say a prolific offense, right? Huh. Because I threw the ball in high school. Like I had to learn how to run the option like my junior and senior year in high school. Like they put in a couple plays for me to run the option. I was forbidden to run. This is a true story. I was a passing quarterback. And that's one reason why I played in Camden, because I could physically throw the football probably as good as anyone, right? And I used to go to Coach Osmar all the time and say, Coach, why am I spinning around throwing this hitch? You know, why can't I just take 3 steps and throw the hitch, right? We're playing Texas A&M, and I backpedaled, you know, and because they were blitzing all the time, and I backpedaled. I've been watching the CFL, I've seen Warren Moon, those guys, and some clips of those guys doing that, right? But I could see the field, and he said, okay, Steve, you can do that. As long as you get to your spot. I'm like, Coach, I got you. I'm going to get to my spot, right? But, you know, we didn't throw the football at Nebraska. I mean, we didn't throw the football. Not a prolific offense and what you needed to do to play at the next level. But so it was interesting, but it was a different time. It was a different time back then. And I tell with this day, even though I was recruited by a lot of schools, some say, hey, you can play receiver or maybe play running back. I'm like, no, I'm a quarterback. But Nebraska says, hey, you're going to play quarterback, and that's it. And so it's a lot easier, you know, to make my decision whether I'm going to play. But that's why I'm just talking about the evolution of Nebraska football and where it is today and where it was when Solis came. And after I was done with my career in Canada, Nebraska needed to change their offense. We needed a change. We've had too many great players. Receivers. That's why your offensive linemen didn't do well in the NFL, the ones that did make it. That's why your running backs didn't do well in the NFL or the CFL, because they couldn't pick up blitz. They couldn't catch the football. They couldn't come run routes. It was great for collegiate football, but if you want to go to the next level, you got to be doing those type of things, you know? And so I was, and the demographics has changed. Now, if you are a minority quarterback or a quarterback that was mobile, you could go anywhere in the country and play. Anywhere, right? Whereas when I was coming out of school, there was only a handful of schools that had an African-American quarterback that I saw on TV. There was only a handful of schools, right? Warren Moon called me and told me, he said, Steve, although I played at Washington, it was a struggle for me every year. Who's going to be the starter? And a battle we had every year. I mean, that's from Warren Moon, right? Who had to go to Canada and play, you know, so that has changed dramatically. And so, and that's what I was telling people, Nebraska needs to change their offense if they want to be able to compete with these other schools, because your athletes are not going to come here. Because now at that time, the NFL was just exploding. It was just exploding. And that's what guys wanted to go. They wanted to go to the NFL. So if I want to go to the NFL, my own quarterback, I'm going to go to a school that can run offense where I can get to that next level. And I think those are all the things that the common fan, they don't really understand about what it takes to come to Nebraska, right? And I talk about this on my radio shows all the time. So we're getting better. And but it's going to be a tough call for Nebraska. It really is. So just dynamics of the NIL and now the revenue sharing and everything. In order for Nebraska to really get these players, they're going to have to do two things. One, they're going to have to pay them, and they're going to have to win. That's it. If they do those things, then we'll have a chance to compete. You know, they used to talk about the walk-on programs. You know, the walk-on program, with all due respect, is gone. It's gone. It's over. I mean, like, I get it. I understand it. It worked at the time, but now that's not the case, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we had 200 guys around. Guys say, "Hey, Steve, I played with him." Like, I never even said, if you weren't with the one or twos, I didn't know you on the team, right? And anyway, it's a different day and age with that. So we'll see how they're going to do. But it's a tough call for Nebraska. And I've been saying this for about 2.5-3 decades, and it's showing true. You know, so we'll see how it plays out.
Well, yeah, we've got the money, so now we just need to start winning.
They got the money.
Let's win some games and schedule some of those non-cons.
They need to spend that money throughout the whole entire squad, not just at quarterback. I'm talking receivers. I'm talking linebackers. I'm talking interior linemen. I'm talking defensive backs. You got to give them their money if you're going to compete, because that's otherwise they're not going to come here. Obviously, with global warming, you know, our weather is better now. I mean, we don't have hardly any cold games.
You know? Right?
It's just the way it's been. So, and then you got all these great practice facilities where you can practice inside. So they're going to have to pay these players to get them to come here, and they're going to have to win games. Yeah.
You said, you know, the times have changed. They certainly have. But there's one thing that does stay the same, and I'd say that's probably our hatred for Colorado. And I have a question regarding them right now.
Yeah.
So one thing I think that kind of gets lost in the shuffle, and I want to ask both of you this question from a player perspective, Steve, for you, and Ken from a media perspective, but back in 86, Nebraska actually had a loss to Colorado in Boulder. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to get your thoughts on this for just Colorado and the Buffaloes at that time. Bill McCartney was in his fifth year as head coach.
Yes.
And he was really stoking the flames of hate for Nebraska and turning it into a real rivalry. And so I'm just curious, Ken, we'll start with you. What was the media feeling in Lincoln about Colorado at that time? And Steve, you can go after that.
Well, we used to have the Big 8 Skywriters, and they took all the writing media, radio, and some TV stations around all the Big 8 schools in a period of about 10 days. And when you got your story done, you got to have fun. But nonetheless, we go to Colorado that summer of 86, and we're in a small meeting room, and Steve remembers the visiting locker rooms, and the facilities were terrible in Colorado. So we're in this kind of Quonset hut thing, and McCartney's talking, and he gets done, and he's taking questions. And I've had 2 grapefruit juices before I went there, and I had another grapefruit juice while I was there. And I start to head down this hallway because I had a lot of liquid in me. And McCartney goes, "You're from Lincoln." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Where do you think you're going?" I said, "Well, you know, nature calls." And he said, "Well, wait a minute." And he got 2 players to escort me to the restroom.
Wow.
Because to get to the restroom, you had to go through the Colorado locker room. And there were red letters all around the room, Nebraska, Nebraska, Nebraska. The schedules were posted on the wall, and the only thing in red was Nebraska in capital letters. And he claimed, and he claimed it for many years, if I only win one game a year, it's this. He's building his program that way. Osborne could have built his program where Oklahoma's our only game of the year. But as Steve can tell you, K-State was important, even though they had a winning streak against them, and Okie State, on and on. And so the media perception in Lincoln was not favorable of McCartney. And then, you know, and we get letters and phone calls about they're vandalizing our cars, and they're when they go out to Boulder. And it was not pretty. It was not, you know, the media, we all got along. Heck, we even got along with Woody Page, and that was nearly impossible to do.
Yeah, right.
No, Steve, what say you? What say you?
It's interesting you say that, because McCartney recruited me, right? And that's when they used to have the spread offense and everything. And he was like, you know, if we get guys like you, Steve, then Ken's spot on with that. He had one thing in mind, that was beating Nebraska. And he told me, he said, we get guys like you, then we're going to be this. We're going to beat Nebraska. We're going to beat Nebraska, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I mean, that sounds good, but I'm not going to be your guinea pig, right? I mean, I got Nebraska. So, you know, knowing that now, what he was doing and what he was building, and we lost that game down there in Boulder, we're just kind of blindsided. And it's because they had that edge, you know. And he was building teams to beat Nebraska. And if you build teams to beat Nebraska, you're going to have some pretty good teams on a national scale, right? And he did just that. But it's interesting, people talk about the only rivalry I ever had was Oklahoma. It was just Oklahoma. Even though Colorado had some good teams and it tested us, we never looked at it as if it was a rival. I mean, our game was Oklahoma. I mean, it really was. You know, and you can throw Miami in there if you want to do that. So, and they have a rivalry. There has to be a lot of different things. There have to be contrasted styles, players, personalities, and there need to be some history. You can't just manufacture a rivalry, right? Colorado kind of grew into that, you know, maybe. I still don't really see it that way. You know, so, but I'm not surprised of the success that they had. I had a great visit there when I went there, and it was a great school, but, you know, I had Nebraska, and why would you go anywhere else, you know? So, great institution. But, go ahead.
You know, I was just going to say, for any Buffalo fans listening, you hear that? You are and always will be little brother.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Yeah,
they get mad at me when we talk about Wisconsin. I say, look, Wisconsin is really our little sister. You know, I said, seriously, I'll never forget this. I was in the airport one day, and I was coming back, and it was a Wisconsin Badger fan sitting in his chair, and he had, you know, had all his gear on, and his head was down. And I said, dude, I feel your pain. I said, I feel your pain. You know, you guys have never won anything. You know, you have all these expectations, right? I said, I feel your pain. I said, I feel it because we've been losing to Wisconsin for years, right? And we've been we're just getting killed by our little sister. I said, but you guys are still Wisconsin. You're not Nebraska, right? And I said, in order for you guys to change and win something, I had a huge debate with him. I said, you know what your problem is? He goes, what? I said, all your quarterbacks look the same. Except for one, right? I said, look at your running backs. Your running backs are identical. They look the same. I can't tell you what year they played, when they played. They all look the same. I said, here's why you guys aren't going to win. When you guys did win, you had a guy like Russell Wilson. Now, granted, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback, no question. But why would you not go out and recruit guys that look like Russell Wilson or can play like Russell Wilson? This is the same thing I say about Iowa. Iowa quarterbacks, they're clones. They all look the same. No different. They all look the same. I'm like, you're never going to win, right? You're not going to win the big one. You're going to win 8, 9, 10 games. But in the end, you're going to lose.
You and I need to work on a book here. Just on that.
I said, if you have a business module and it works, why not do it? Why would you do that running back? Yeah. Those guys, they go to NFL all the time. Why don't you do that quarterback? Or other positions as well, right? But they have that old Nebraska philosophy. Piece the team together, get these kind of players here, get an okay guy that can run routes, that can block, you know, but they don't do anything like crazy, right? Get out of your box.
Okay. Well, that's the Barry Alvarez influence, and he
turned out. Exactly. Exactly, over, right? Yeah. So you guys aren't going to get over the hump, right? But Nebraska made the change. They adapted, you know, and Osborne did that. And the system worked. The system worked, you know, but they needed to tweak it.
This is fascinating, fantastic stuff, guys. I have one more question I would love to kind of discuss with the whole group, and we got to get your story about the bowl game, Steve. But We've talked about it a little bit, but I think it's really relevant because not only was it a theme throughout the 80s, it really had a lot of influence in Osborne continuing to adapt and evolve and change the talent that he pursued, which led to the national championships in the 90s. And that is the Nebraska having trouble beating the faster Florida teams, right? So we've talked about Florida State. It losing that bowl game after the 87 season. I think that was the one you mentioned. We lost 31-28, Steve.
Yeah, we kind of had the game one. We're on the 1 yard line. We scored. I mean, I get it. It was 1 yard line and 4th and 22. They throw a skinny post. That was a hard. I mean, it's not like, and we would have swept. I mean, so it wasn't like it was a gimmick win. When we had them beat. We had them beat. It was kind of a lucky deal. And that game always irritated me because I told Tyrese, I said, dude, don't try to jump. Just put your head down.
And win.
Yeah. I'm like, he did it early, and he loved Herschel Walker, right? He kind of had that, whatever, right? And so not only that did we fumble. I mean, they go 114 yards. I mean, it was 4th and 22, you know, and they throw us. And it was after penalty that they got down there and did what they did. So, but we would have swept Florida State. And would have had an inside outside chance to maybe win a national championship, you know. But that game irritated me. Those two games, that game and the game of Century 2, are the only games that really I wish we can have over because we were the better team.
Keith
Gibson had a role to play there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. And so I know. I mean, Keith was that the Sooners. They were outstanding. I mean, and they knew how to defend us. And I never forget this when Barry said, you know, Steve. He said, all we had to do was stop you, number 9, and we got the game won. Right. I mean, that was his goal. And that's kind of what, if I would have had, and nothing against, we were just missing a player or two, just a player or two. And that made a difference where teams didn't have to like just key on me and say, hey, stop number 9. You know, the difference was it was Eric Krause, myself, and Tommy Frazier. And we laugh about this all the time. We're doing an interview and they asked Eric, hey, Eric, what was your best play? Eric's, I don't know. 17 counter, 18, 19 quarterback counter. They said, Steve, what was yours? I was like, 32 option, 41, 49 counter boot. They go, Tommy, what was your best play? 44 ISO.
Yeah.
He was handing the ball off. Handing the ball to the middle.
That 94-95 team was clearly, I think, one of the best teams ever played collegiate football on both sides of the football. On both sides, they were just that good, and that they had. I was watching highlights. I was in bed one night, and some highlights came up, and I kept seeing this number. I was in Canada most of the time, right? I kept seeing this number 30 guy. I'm like, that's not Rozier. I'm like, who is that? It was freaking Amon Green. He didn't play, and it was Amon Green. That was their 1-2. That was their 1-2 punch. I was like, whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And one of their best defensive players was Darren Nurstad punting.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm curious because so we talk about that loss to Florida State. Steve, you talked about how good that Miami team was that you played in the bowl game. And then the season after you left, Steve, the 89 season, Nebraska lost to Florida State in the Fiesta Bowl 41-17. Yeah. And this is like the beginning of our the common fans' Husker football consciousness was this late 80s, early 90s, going to bowl games in the South, not being able to compete with these faster Florida teams. It sounded like, at least with Miami, Steve, that felt real to you. Like there was a disparity in talent. Ken, I'd love your kind of take on this too and how it influenced T.O. going into the 90s. Sorry, go ahead, guys.
Well, Nebraska did not play very good pass defense. And that was because once again, they were just doing that transition to actually recruiting defensive players. And the guys like Tyrone Byrd and Reggie Cooper and those guys were coming, but they weren't there yet. And for instance, that Florida State bowl game, they ate up the secondary for lunch. I mean, it was people yelling at Darlington because he didn't like players to look back. He didn't want his corners to look back at a ball. And Steve could tell you, for a quarterback, it's like, good.
Yeah. And that's why I say even our 87, 88 teams, we were that damn good. I mean, because we beat those Florida State teams. I mean, we beat those teams that had all that overall speed. You know, that's how talented we really were. Now, we didn't have the depth that these other teams had, but then we could do that. But yeah, the one Miami game, when I saw, and I was older, that was like my third year, and that's when I really started watching, because that's when I was thinking about I was going to go to the next level and play and to see all this kind of stuff, right? And to absorb it and take it all in. You know, that our linebackers couldn't cover a back coming out of the flat.
Nope.
Couldn't do it, right? We couldn't get the pressure on them. You know, our interior line, we just couldn't do it, right? We couldn't disrupt and cause all the havoc in the interior line like they did in those 90s, because they didn't have the quickness and the strength and the agility. So, you know, but that's how I think we get overlooked sometimes, but that's how talented we really were. And if you look at those teams, and I keep saying the teams that we played, I mean, back to back to back, the talent level and how good those, the South Carolina teams. I mean,
oh, jeez.
I mean, think about this. We played them twice, home and away, the Sterling Sharps and all those guys. I mean, those are some of the best teams that they've ever had in their program.
And right? They were some of the best steroid users of all time, if you will know.
Yeah. The best needles.
You know, those guys, they had some like 5'8 guys that were built like houses. You remember them? I mean, that was a crazy game down there.
And they had the
saying, if it ain't swaying, we ain't playing.
Yeah.
If everybody in the upper deck did this, the deck would move. And they had to announce, please don't do that, because the place was packed. Everybody, I mean, yeah, South Carolina was a real thing.
Yeah, I mean,
Mark Blazek, the tank commander in the National Guard, he makes a pick at the end of the game.
Exactly, won that game, you know. Yeah. You know, so those are the type of teams that, so I'm very proud of what we did and our record. And like I said, we were just a player or two short on both sides, but our overall team talent, I mean, the guys that we had starting and playing, the Charles Fry was a great, great defensive back. With his stature. I mean, he was one of the best defensive backs to play here. But we need a couple of them, you know, we need a couple of those Charles Fryers. And anyway, so it's just a tribute to Nebraska, to Coach Osborne, to see him evolve as a coach. You know, and then I'm just a motivator, to be a motivator, which at one time he didn't talk fondly of, and it was okay. It was okay to get your teams fired up. You know, it was okay for players to talk. And he went and, you know, I talked to a lot of those guys. Did you guys do the prayer speech? I'm like, no, we didn't do that. The day by day, we didn't do any of that stuff. You know, we didn't have the unity council to police your own team. That brought the team cohesiveness together. We didn't do those things. So Coach Osmond did all these things because he knew what the edge was to get over the hump, if there was a hump, because he was very, very close, right? My point is, he wasn't afraid to now say, let's do these things. Let's try it. Let's test it. And it just paid huge, huge dividends.
I think that's one of the biggest themes that is underlining every conversation we're having about Coach Osborne, going back to being an assistant in the 60s, is – we think of him. I remember growing up, and he'd have these kind of press conferences. He wasn't very pronounced or loud or anything like that, but really open minded and really like he continued to evolve. He continued to adapt, and that really led to his success. It's really fascinating. So, so as we wrap up the 80s, a couple emerging themes here. I think Oklahoma is still the main rival. But we're starting to beat them more. I think that it was 5-5 against Oklahoma in the 80s. Colorado's kind of emerging. They'll always be little brother. Don't forget that, Buffalo. The impact of the Florida team, specifically Miami and Florida State, the speed that we saw and the need to evolve there. And then, of course, the big one, T.O. still can't win the big one. It's kind of an emerging theme. But to wrap it all up, I actually want to, Steve, get your take on something from his book, More Than Winning. It's a little bit more of a big picture thought on his approach, right? So this is what T.O.'s words. I've gotten away from measuring success in terms of wins and losses. It's a mistake those of us in coaching too often make when we define a good season as winning a certain number of games or a championship. It's very difficult year in and year out to win the number of games that fans, press, alumni, or even the coaches themselves feel is necessary to be successful. And then he goes on to really kind of dive into another theme that really emerges over and over is his process. And he talks about his process and what they would do on Tuesday to plan for Saturday's game and how they would define success by various measures that may or may not result in victory, but they felt like this is what we're capable of and this is what we need to hit kind of thing. But then what I love is he wraps it up by talking about athletes and his relationship with his players. And he says this, "Therefore, it's important that we coaches do what we can to give our players the feeling that we accept them and like them as people first and players second. Some of them will have to be third and fourth stringers. Some of them will be disappointed in their playing time. Some of them will be injured. As we alter their position on the depth chart and as we attempt to mold them into better players by disciplining them, it is very important that we continue to reinforce the idea that they have personal worth." Steve, you want to comment on that?
I mean, I sum it up this way. People always talk about, you know, what was Coach Osborne like, right? And I said, you know, he was just a great coach. He was a great coach in the fact that his process, the preparation, I mean, you're going to be a great player on the field, but he wants you to be a great person off the field. I think that's why Nebraska was a good fit for me. And I still carry his principles in my business practices and just my way of life, you know? So when I think of Coach Osborne, he was just a great coach. And you're always going to have disgruntled players. I mean, there's no question about that. But I think he always gave a player a fair chance. And, I don't care who you were or what your stature was. I never forget. I came back from and Tommy Frazier was in the media room, you know, just looking at, you know, statistics and stuff like that. And he was pissed off. He had his pants on. I'm like, dude, what's wrong? He said, man, I can't believe Coach Osborne has Brooke and I going to camp as equals. That's what he said. He said, I can't believe I got to go and he's going to evaluate us because I know what they go through. Percentages, fumbles, check calling, you know, it was no, you're going in spring football as equals. That's the type of coach he was. So, and type of person he was. I got a picture of Coach Osborne, I think it was against UCLA, where, and people will say, why do you have that picture on your Facebook? He's yelling at you. I'm like, no, he's not. Coach Osborne raised his voice at me one time. I've had interceptions, key interceptions, key fumbles in games. He's raised his voice at me one time. And that was during a Thursday practice when we were getting ready to travel and whatnot. And I went to make an audible too late, my cadence. And he said, Steve, you can't do that. He yelled, right? That's the only time he ever raised his voice at me. I said, no. I said, look at his demeanor. He has his hands behind his back. He's calling the play. Power right, 49 counter sweep. You know, he's calling the play. That's how he ran. He was so prepared. You see these coaches, I laugh, right? You see these coaches on sideline with these huge play calling sheets, all laminated and everything, right? Coach Osborne had this, and he had it broken out in fours, and he had your defensive fronts and your coverages. Not one play was on there. Not one play was on there. He would call the play from the sideline. I got to the point my junior, senior year when Dana Brinson was bringing a play in, I knew what play it was going to be because I knew how he was running the plays that were running and setting it up. I knew what the play was going to be. His process, his preparation, his knowledge was absolutely amazing. And he was always cool. And even after the UCLA game, I threw 5 touchdown pass and I was in a Heisman conversation. He said, Steve, just remember, when things are going well, the quarterback gets way too much credit. And when things aren't going so well, he gets way too much of the blame. He would just say subtle things.
That's like, a beautiful quote.
He would just say subtle things like that every day, something. And so you're mindful of that. You know, so he's just a great coach. He's just a great coach and he's a good guy. And I'm surprised at some of the things I said to him now that I'm 58 years old and I see him working out, you know, because our relationship is different, you know. Talking about Pelini one day, I never forget this. And we were talking and he said, what do you think, Steve? I said, Coach, you know what? If I had a kid, he would never come to Nebraska and play. So he wouldn't come. If I had a boy, he wouldn't. I said, I wasn't coached like that. And I wouldn't allow my kid to be coached like that. And he looked at me like, because he knew how I was coached. Damn, and I like Bo. And Bo just got frustrated towards the end. But that's when it was a point. And I know times are changing. I said, but my kid would never play for a coach like that because I didn't get coached like that. And he looked at me with a towel over his head. You know, he's almost my height now, right? He's my height now. He just nodded his head.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not the way he did things. That's not the way we did things.
Sure. Wow.
Anyways, I hope that sums up what I think about Coach.
That's fantastic.
Perfect way. It was that way. Just the way it was.
And, Ken, any final thoughts from you?
No, you used them all. And when you only have one brain cell, and it fell out while we were talking. So sorry about that. You got to remember, I've been retired for 7 years. I drive the train at the Children's Zoo. So if you all want to come over to the zoo, I've never derailed. I don't think I've ever lost a passenger.
No,
more about that. Yeah.
I've always enjoyed Ken, and we've talked. We both each other and Mike as well. I've done some things. They've written books and done some things, but you know they were always true in how they evaluated Nebraska football and what they said. And I've always respected them. And so I appreciate you, Cam. You've always been good.
You're too kind.
And, no, it's true, you know. So I never was afraid to read the paper or someone's going to say. It was always, you know, pretty much on point in what it was, you know, because we had some heartbreaking losses and we had some great wins, you know.
Yeah.
You appreciate all that when you're done playing, you know, that you are, you know. So I appreciate you, and I appreciate to the fans in Nebraska.
Well, yeah, this common fan thing. How cool is that? Yeah.
And you guys have done a good job, because I keep telling you, you know, and our expectations are pretty high, right? And they should be.
Right.
They should. You know, but things have changed now. You don't have to go undefeated to win the season. You know, to win.
Sure.
So a lot of things have changed. So hopefully Nebraska can just adapt, and hopefully the state can adapt and get on board with the process. You know, with everything. So.
Well, we're on board with the 2025 year 3 leap for Matt Rhule. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's go. Yes, we will.
Thanks so much to Husker legend Steve Taylor, Lincoln Journal star legend Ken Hambleton. We've got a couple more episodes in this TO series coming up. So much happened in the 90s that we're breaking up into 2 episodes. And so those are still yet to come, common fans. So hope you're enjoying this series. We will be back at you soon. Oh, Ken's getting a kiss. All right.
There we go. All right.
I love that. My wife.
Yeah.
So now you better.
Wow.
The tape.
Yeah. All right. He's got another buddy coming in here.
All kinds of people.
Everyone loves it.
What a great way to end it. All right.
Yeah.
We'll be back at you soon, common fans. In the meantime, as always, GBR. For life.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off 2 or more select major appliances. Plus, get 3 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.